Hi, this is Craig with Mental Health Insights, and just a quick note before the show. This is a show that is actually done over Zoom due to the social or the physical distancing that we are all doing during this time of the virus in which this video is recorded. So I wanted to apologize for this audio quality not being as good as it normally is, but you can still hear us very clearly, and this is good information that we wish to provide to you. So without further ado, allow us to get to the show. Welcome to Mental Health Insights. We are here today doing another Zoom meeting or a Zoom podcast here. So with me today right now is Pete and Kristen. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hi.
So we were actually just talking a little bit before the podcast. And I think that right now while we're recording this, we're still amid the virus that's kind of wreaking havoc and keeping all of us at home. So I think that this may actually be a really good opportunity that so many of us are home and we're at home with our kids. And one of the things we were talking about was that what are some of the conversations that you can have with your kids while they're at home that are maybe difficult conversations or difficult topics that we might avoid. And one of the first things that came up for us is talking about sex with your kids. And I know this is kind of like a big taboo a lot of times. It's a difficult conversation to have, I think, for many parents. So I kind of wonder now, Pete and Kristen, I know both of you guys are parents, and I'm a lot newer parent than you guys are. So I just kind of wonder for you guys, even kind of knowing that, you know, you guys as parents, I know that Pete, you have had these conversations with your kids, and Kristen, I know these are probably ongoing conversations with your kids. What is it like for you guys whenever you get to those moments where you have those kind of conversations?
Pete, how old are your kids?
My son is grown. He's 34.
Oh, okay.
So
mine are 9 and 11.
Mm-hmm. So he's still 12. Waiting for the talk.
He's waiting. I waited till his wedding night, and then I said, okay, son, it's time to have the talk.
Let's talk about the birds and the bees.
Yeah. I had a great book called Raising Sexually Healthy Children, which was a really good guide that I was reading probably when he was middle elementary, so second, third, fourth grade, kind of. And just the thing that stuck out to me the most and I found extremely helpful was anytime that he would ask questions, just to answer them honestly, but to make it age appropriate. So not disclosing too much information or information that's beyond his ability to understand. So at younger ages, it's more concrete, more biological, more about how he feels, reducing shame. So I think with younger kids, it really is about, I think, more matter of fact kinds of things, and normalizing any curiosity, any exploration they may be interested in or thinking about doing, or maybe that they are doing, and normalizing that is just a part of the process, but also having them understand that there are boundaries. You know, what's appropriate, not appropriate. It's not appropriate to discuss some of these things with other school kids. It's not appropriate to be, you know, doing things like that at school. You know, they're thinking about appropriate places and appropriate people, again, not at school, not with other kids, with, you know, mom or dad, or trusted caregiver, if they're, you know, with a foster parent or step parent or whatever, somebody that they trust. And it's done in private. It's not done out at the supermarket or, you know, other places like that, but helping them learn that there's privacy, and then there's, and that's where we talk about things like that, or ask questions or do things related that are sexually oriented. And then there are public places where we don't do that and we don't talk about it. And just helping them learn that there's, that this is sacred and private and has a place.
I think that's a, I think one of the things you said there that really stuck to me is like encouraging them and answering questions to kind of appease that curiosity. Because I feel like so much of, and Pete, you were talking a little bit about this before we started recording, like in our Western culture, there's very much a shaming and don't talk about this kind of thing around sex. And I know that it was definitely like that whenever I was growing up. And I bet it's been like that for a lot of people.
Yes.
Where it's like, hey, this isn't okay to talk about. Or it feels really awkward or really strange to talk about. And I feel like that's a big deal. Like whenever someone is asking and they're really young, when they start to notice that there's differences or what are these things going on, and actually being able to reward that curiosity. I never thought about that, like keeping mostly fact-based whenever they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of anatomy, depending on how old they are.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, where my sixth grader is turning 12, and sixth grade sounds really young for more advanced talks about sex, but we're talking about right now safe sex and condoms and you know, some sex etiquette. He understands that penetration happens. I don't think he fully grasps it, but he will in the next year for sure. And kids in his age range will, some of them will be sexually active within the next year or two, depending on their situations. And my goal is to make sure that he has some early education before he just totally tries to run away with me. Right now, he's still willing to sit with mom and talk about this. And I think it's really important to slowly deliver this information with like 10, 15 minute intervals over time that repeat the same topics in a little bit different ways over time. So there's this constant exposure. Growing, the conversation grows in its complexity over time too.
You said something there too that I think is important, is like you said, I don't, like sixth grade, and you said, I don't know if that's too young. And I think a lot of people have a lot of different feelings on that.
I think they think yes, it is too young.
I don't, the research around it is actually quite contrary to that.
Right.
Research shows that the younger and younger that you talk to kids about sex, the better outcomes that they have as far as not having like impulse control issues or being able to like control like a lot of those impulses, or being able to just kind of talk about it and have a healthy, active sex life. And like reducing that shame, like there's a lot of great outcomes the earlier and earlier that you talk to kids. And some research, I mean, I know some of the youngest research I saw was actually talking to them in grade school about this stuff.
My kids and I have been talking about this since I'm divorced and remarried, and me and my husband had a pregnancy a few years back that we lost, but I was pregnant and I had to tell the kids I was pregnant. And then like, I drew a picture of like where the baby is and the uterus and the umbilical cord. And we did a lot of like scientific anatomical education there. And that was really fun for them. And so we've been talking about this for a long time in different ways. And it's inspiring them to be interested in medicine. You know, the younger one is like, you know, I think being a doctor sounds really cool. And for a while he wanted to deliver babies, you know, and who knows if he'll do it or not, but it's, you know, sparks an interest there. Like, oh, how does all of this work? This is so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that like knowing, and like I did a presentation on this before, and I feel like this is true for so many things, and especially around sex. Like, it's just such a risky thing, because if your kids are not getting information from you about sex, they are getting it somewhere.
100%.
Yeah, and the sources that they probably get it from are probably not sources you want them to get it from.
Right.
Like, you don't really want them to get information about sex from porn. You don't really want them to get it from some rando on the internet. You don't want them to get it from, you know, the first website that pops up on Google. You don't really want them to, or their friends, right? You don't really want them to get this kind of information from those types of people, because they will.
And middle school is the prime time for it, when, you know, my goal is for the boys, when porn enters the scene, however it does, and it will invariably, I hope that my boys will look at that and be like, dude, that's not even real. You know, that's not what it really is. Mm-hmm. And so that they're primed to have some already in place schema around sex and what that means.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of along the theme of what we've been saying, is that the younger that we talk to them and create that foundation of understanding, it reduces the curiosity. Mm-hmm. It helps them become more comfortable with their own bodies and their own understanding of the differences that are in different people. And it helps them feel comfortable enough to be able to talk about it without necessarily having to seek out that curiosity in other places. As we said, it reduces shame, that it improves the level of communication between, you know, us as parents and them as children, and they can feel like they can actually come and talk to us about it, that it's okay to ask questions, it's okay to have curiosity, it's okay to not know and to seek out information, but we can be a trusted source that's going to give them good information, and it's not going to be so awkward or uncomfortable. You reduce, the whole goal of the book was, and the theme of it was, that over the lifespan, you reduce that discomfort by making it just a natural part of anything else you would talk about. Just like if they were asking about, you know, why is the sky blue and why is the, you know, the grass green? And, you know, it's just, this is something else that occurs in life. This is a part of nature, it's a part of human biology and part of how we express love for each other and so on and so forth. It just becomes something else we talk about, as opposed to this, oh my God, we have this conversation, you know.
Well, let's talk about why parents themselves find it so difficult to discuss with their kids. I've run into plenty of parents that are like, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I don't care how healthy you're telling me it is.
I think a lot of them have been shamed and guilted about talking about it, whether or not it's been in their own relationship or their own growing up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's strange. I know it's probably strange for you guys as therapists too. Like, since I work with couples, I talk about sex all the time. My wife does not. So if I ever talk to her about sex, she's exactly that same way. Don't talk to me about that. Like, keep it away. I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And like, I become so comfortable talking about it, mm-hmm. that you can see like a huge dynamic there, where like there is a huge shame. There's a huge guilt part. There's a huge like, no, that's not okay. That's kind of like a hush thing. So like, I already know I'm going to be the one having these conversations with my son whenever he does become old enough. But I think that there's just so much of that guilt and shame that's around it, that it becomes so hard to do. And parents, they get into a tricky situation where they assume that the guilt and shame that they feel that keeps them from talking is something that their child feels around it too,
mm-hmm.
which is not true, mm-hmm. right? But they can project that guilt and shame on them, so their child starts to feel that over time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's what I grew up with. We had an interesting dynamic of lots of sexual innuendos just like out there, but then the flip side of the coin is that it was really shameful and bad also. So it was very, very confusing. I also, in middle school, I had a girlfriend that her parents never talked about sex. And the day that her mom left her a box of condoms on her bed was the day that she found out she was pregnant with her daughter when we were 18. So that was a bit too late for for an intervention. So there's a difference between totally avoiding the topic, that's one end of the spectrum, and then being abusive with way too much information and exposure on the topic of sex.
Yeah, I think, Kristen, it's a great question that you posed. And like Craig, I agree. It really comes down to the adult, the parent, and their own comfort level. And what I learned is it was a great opportunity for me to untangle my own discomfort with it.
100%, absolutely.
Yeah, by having those conversations with my son at various stages, as he would either ask questions or things would come up, you know, even watching something on TV, you know, and the people are kissing, ooh, look at them, you know, and then, oh, really? So tell me a little bit more about that. Why do you feel like, ooh, you know? And we just have a conversation, and it may not have gone very far at all, but just normalizing. That's what people do when people love each other. Sometimes they do that. You know, that's a way of expressing. Yeah.
That's the biggest message here, Pete, and I think the biggest thing people can take away from it is to normalize the conversation, also examine yourself and why you feel guilt and shame around it, and know that you do not have to feel guilty or shameful about it. And also having these conversations with your kids throughout their lifespan is a way to prevent issues like STDs, teen pregnancy, and them feeling shameful themselves, because you do not want them to feel the shame that you feel, which can be very difficult to navigate if you've grown up confused about sex anyway, to know like, what's normal when I am going to have this conversation with my child. But you can guarantee that any conversation that's not pornographic and nature is going to be fine, because we are sexual beings, we procreate, it is a part of life. And it just is. And the shame and the guilt that we feel comes from a history of, you know, culture and religion that it's primed us to feel this way. And you know, it's just an important conversation to have. And also there's other conversations while we're in quarantine that we can be having with our kids. Sex is one. What do you guys think about what else we can be talking about with our children or teens?
I think that sex is a really big one, but I think that this is also like a really great opportunity to talk to your kids about drugs. This is, for me, this goes along the same lines of sex. We have certain feelings about drugs, and, or we may have used drugs ourselves in the past, so that there's a lot of guilt or shame right there that tries to like keep us from talking about it. But I think it's the same thing, where the earlier and earlier you talk about it, the better and better it is, or the little conversations that you have over time, they grow into more complex conversations that you then get to be able to have later on. It's better than just doing one big conversation and then like, let's never touch it again. Because like Pete was saying, you want to be the resource that your kid comes to. So the more and more that you can talk about these things, even if you don't know all the answers about drugs, like you may not know all the answers, and that's okay. Then you and your child can find out together. You guys can hop onto a reputable website and look up some information, or, you know, talk to a doctor about it, whatever. You can join in that journey to discover, right? Rather than them discovering on their own or asking their peers, because the information they get there is not going to be information you want them to have.
Right.
I think drugs has always been a tough conversation for me. So I've been educating myself big time on addiction and drug use. And I just finished the book called The Unbroken Brain, which I think anybody who's not a counselor could listen to very easily. It's sort of a mixture between the history of drugs, a story, like a narrative story, and also, you know, some brain science mixed in that is really easy to digest. And that gives a good foundation and an understanding of drug use. And I think behind that topic is the worry about addiction. And then behind that is learning self-regulation so that it, you don't go down that path to become addicted to drugs, which is the ultimate fear of drug use, I think, for any parent. So that's a good resource if anybody's looking for more information.
Yeah, I think even just hearing you say that, like one of the other important things is, so like I was a drug counselor for 6 years. I still do some a little bit. So I guess I've got more years than that now. But for me, drugs were never really talked about. But I am genetically predisposed because grandpa, dad, all of them heavy drinkers, right? So I have alcoholic tendencies in my gene. It affects me differently. It tastes differently to me than it would another person that doesn't have those types of tendencies. So that also becomes another type of conversation to have. And that'll be a conversation that I'll be having with my son too. It's like, it will be different for you because it is represented in our genes and we are more susceptible to that kind of influence or that kind of pull than other people may be because of our genetic predisposition. So like we actually have to be extra careful around this. And there was actually me discovering that and the work that I did that drove me to like find out so much information about drugs and understand them. And, you know, for those of you guys that are listening to this podcast, I have quite a few episodes about addiction and about different drugs and different things like that. It's an ongoing series, but I think that, it's such an important thing and it's such a hard topic a lot of times, because a lot of times parents don't feel like they're equipped to talk to their kids about drugs. Mm-hmm. But even just having the conversation and finding out what are your kids thinking about them, how much do they know, that will facilitate other conversations that you guys can have together better off than letting them find the information on their own.
I think parents often want to lean towards saying like abstinence, just don't do it. I mean, that can make them more curious sometimes.
I tell you right now that my wife and I are talking about installing, like we have like a little wine bar in mm-hmm. our house. And so not talking about drugs at all wouldn't work. He's going to see our wine bar. He's going to know that this has been there and mom and dad drink wine. Yeah. So taking a stance where like you don't ever talk about it is probably the worst thing that you could do.
I think that a conversation about drugs would include, you know, why someone would do drugs, to just try it, why someone would continually do drugs, the effects of drugs, and learning other options other than doing drugs to help regulate your emotions. Because in my opinion, from what I've been reading and learning, that the bedrock of habitual drug use is it's a combination of many things, ultimately learning that, you know, drugs make me feel better so I don't have to feel horrible about this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about regulation and learning to teach your brain to go in a different direction other than down the path of drug use.
So yeah, I think that's incredibly important. I really like that. And even helping them understand brain development, you know, the just the basics, that their brain isn't fully developed until they're in their mid-20s. So knowing that they're more vulnerable to becoming dependent at a younger age than an adult whose brain is more fully developed, who has developed, in many cases, many adults already have those self-regulation skills.
Right.
And their brain has developed to help them manage those better, that because their brain doesn't have those parts yet that help with regulation, those parts are still growing and developing, they're not all there yet, that drugs inhibit that capacity and makes them more vulnerable to become dependent. With less use, the more stressful their life may be, there's you know, some of these factors that make them more vulnerable to having issues with it.
Once you understand that, it all makes so much sense. The my next book that I'm listening to right now is called The Teenage Brain by Frances Jensen and Amy Ellis Nutt. Okay. And it is a great book for teens to listen to, teens or young adults alike to listen to, and it goes over, you know, basically what's going on in the adolescent brain, and is a great springboard for adults to understand their kids and why it's important to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And for also kids to understand themselves and to understand, like, it's not that you're weak or you're bad. Your brain is just primed to learn new things. And if drugs seem exciting to you, you're kind of inhibited already because you're not really up in your prefrontal cortex yet making good decisions.
That's right. Yeah, The Whole Brain Child by Dan Siegel is another great book. And that's one that I used to suggest to a lot of parents to read. Because it's designed more for parents, but it really helps parents understand it in layman's terms, and they can actually have conversations with their kids. I've heard of the book that you mentioned, Kristen. I haven't looked at it yet, but if it's appropriate for preteens and teens, I think that's awesome. That's a great way that you know, parent and child can kind of go through something like that together.
Yeah, it's a great book. And I tell you what, as a parent of a preteen, you know, I'm constantly wanting to kind of lose my mind. And this education in neuroscience, which sounds really big and complicated, but you know, when you're reading these books, it's not.
Well, I want to kind of actually go back to something that Pete was saying earlier, because I think that whenever I heard it, I was just like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. The more this conversation about drugs will also facilitate conversations about other things that you were talking about before we started recording, Kristen, about like emotions and like, hey, like if your brain's not fully developed, that makes sense that you get angry and then you get upset. Like you don't have the same mechanisms to be able to, you know, cope, or you don't have the same mechanism to calm yourself down. Like they just don't have as much practice as an adult brain yet, or they don't have all the development there yet. And I think that it creates a lot of good opportunities, because I know that like parents, the more and more that we understand as parents that our adolescents, that their brains are developing. So like that makes sense that they get angry. That makes sense that they get upset. That makes sense that like they get irritated or annoyed or anything easily because they don't have the same mental functioning that we do. And I think a lot of times we look at them, we just assume that they should be a tiny adult. And you know what? It doesn't help us that movies portray this. It doesn't help us that like books portray this as well. That, you know, they portray these characters that are like super advanced type thinkers whenever they really shouldn't be. Like the first thing that jumps to my mind is like Harry Potter, extremely level like kid, despite everything that's happened to him. And if that guy was real, if that character was real, he wouldn't have an effect anywhere close to that.
No. You know, I was just thinking, if you as a parent have a background where you don't know what's normal, and you're watching movies and just consuming whatever's out in the media, like what you're saying, Craig, like, kind of your expectation gets shifted a bit into that. I know mine has, until I started educating myself just recently in the last couple of months. I'm like, you know, I need to understand this. Mm-hmm. My first lesson was understanding empathy with the kids. Like, you know, you're a therapist, Kristen, like use empathy with the children. Don't yell or get impatient because they don't respond that way. And I just like to learn things. So I'm just like going deeper and deeper and deeper. And the more I learn about how my children's brains work, honestly the easier time I'm having. Like it's making it so wonderful. Because I'm calmer, and just because I'm calmer, they're more cooperative. And when they're not, I'm like, you know, you're 11-year-old boy, you're a 9-year-old boy, I can't expect you to want to, you know, read this paragraph on the Russian Empire or whatever, you know. Why would you? But we also
expect you to want to sit down and do your online homework during this time.
Yeah,
of course you're gonna fight it, or you know, heaven forbid that you jump out of bed in the morning already and gearing to go.
Right. I mean, why aren't you dressed with a suit and tie on and coffee waiting for me? Jeez.
never mind that as they move more and more into adolescence, the hormones, you know, so we talked about the brain, but you also have the impact of the hormones on the entire system, the moodiness and the shifts from being, you know, really excited and happy to being sad or mad and, you know, furious or anxious and all of those things, and how it goes from minute to minute. It's just, I don't want to go back there myself. I
mean, no,
that was a rough period. No. But in essence, that's the other thing that happens as our kids move through whatever developmental phase they're going through, we psychologically and emotionally go back through those same phases, and any unresolved stuff that we have is going to come back up because our kids are going to just naturally bring it up for us. So it's a prime opportunity, and I know parents hate this when I tell them, but I say it's a prime opportunity to revisit that part of your life too. And just to remember that, first of all, their world is different than your world. So they're going through a different experience than you are, or than you did when you were their age. And secondly, what they're feeling may not be exactly how you felt, but you may be able to relate to that particular developmental issue or challenge, you know, learning, you know, how to get along with other kids and being part of the clique or not being part of the clique, you know, being in or being out, being popular or unpopular, whatever it happens to be, you can probably relate to what that feels like. But the most important thing is just to listen. Don't lecture. Don't try and tell them, you know, how they feel. Just listen and validate where they are more than anything. That's the most critical thing we can do, and hold the boundaries.
And don't try to fix it.
Mm-hmm. You can't fix it. They're going to be in pain. They're going to have to go through it. But I really liked the natural and logical consequences as a great tool, because these are the boundaries. When you chose this, this was a consequence you chose. And that becomes a mantra. If you get into a debate with them, if you get into a discussion, you're going to lose. They have nothing but time on their hands to badger you to get their way. And they will, because they don't have bills to pay. They don't have responsibilities around the house. They don't have to go to work. They don't have any of that stuff. All they have is what I want and what I want right now. All that matters. And Chris is going, yeah.
It has gotten easier. I swear it has gotten easier since I've been employing empathy for probably about a year now and doing the neuroscience education. It's really, my husband can attest to this. It has literally changed the atmosphere of our home.
I bet it has.
Quite literally. It's not to say that the kids aren't difficult, because they're kids, but you know, it's so much easier to handle.
Well, and you know, one of the things you guys are talking about is like not only being able to show empathy, being able to listen, and I can tell this like whenever I'm meeting with my adolescent clients, because I'm telling you this right now, a lot of these conversations that we've talked about, I have these conversations all the time with adolescent clients. They want to know. They ask me about sex. They ask me about drugs. They ask me about their feelings, right? And I'm not pulling some magic key out that unlocks their ability to talk to me. It's that I just sit there and I listen to them. And, you know, I try my best to understand and really encourage them and validate, like, how difficult this time is. And I can tell whenever I go into the other side, Mm-hmm. Right. And this happens, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm human. And it happened the other day. I remember writing it up in my case note, right? Case note is what us therapists type up after we have a session. And I wrote that, yeah, she was talking to me about this experience. And then I noticed that I started giving her my views on it. And I saw her eyes glass over. And I said, oh, I just lost you right there, didn't I? And she goes, yeah, you did. I was like, I just became your parents right there, didn't I? She goes, uh-huh. You sure did, Craig. And I was like, okay. I go, thank you for letting me know that. I go, I'll try to catch myself quicker next time. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I all of a sudden went into this place where I wasn't listening to her, where I wasn't trying to understand her and everything. And, you know, as adults, we can talk in that place and we can give each other advice. And, you know, as an adult, you could choose to follow it or not. Guess what? Adults are going to be more likely to listen to advice and logic than kids are. They just are. They have the capacity to be able to do that. Kids, they do not. Right? I cannot logically go and tell a teenager why they should study really hard because that's going to impact their future greatly. I can't do that, right? They, unless that is their experience and they have experience with, hey, whenever I work hard, things go well, they aren't going to listen to that advice. It'll just fall on deaf ears. And it's not because they're dumb or ignorant or anything. It's just because they don't have that capability in their brain to be able to make those connections yet.
Everything has to be taught. A conversation that we have, it feels like minute by minute at my house, is self-regulation and bringing it to the forefront and to the into the awareness of the kids. For example, sitting one day trying to read like 7 little pages on the computer. I think it was the Roman Empire. And my oldest literally spent the entire day vacillating between crying about it, getting mad about it, trying to charm his way out of it. And finally, literally, it was 6 p.m. at night. I was getting ready to go on my bike ride. And he decided he was going to sit down and read this. He read it. It was fine. He felt good. He completed the worksheet. And so the next day when he started that cycle again for some other thing, let's talk about what happened yesterday. What do you notice? You got upset all day, right? Yeah. And then eventually you decided, okay, I'm going to do this. What happened during that time you decided that you were going to do this? And he said, well, I really wanted to have my iPad time and I wanted to be able to play with my brother. So I decided that it would probably be a good idea to, you know, do my work. And I said, okay, so how do we take that feeling that you had yesterday when you decided to do that work to make this a little bit shorter today? And he did a good job. And then the next day we talked about it again and it was actually more driven by him. And he like verbalized what we had discussed that, okay, I know I'm going to have to do this anyway. I'd really like to have my free time. So I'm going to sit down and do this now and I'll feel much better once it's over anyway. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, it's sinking in. We're doing good.
Yeah. What's great about what you did there, Kristen, is you helped him to internalize the process. So rather than telling him what to do, what he should do, or lecturing, not that may or may not have occurred, because again, we're all imperfect parents, and even learning skills like that can, it's an imperfect process. That being said, the end outcome of what you accomplished with him, and by asking him those self-reflective questions, we actually, switching to the neuroscience piece again, we act as the prefrontal cortex in that piece. We engage that part of their life in a way that helps them to start to internalize it and helps create those neural connections in the part of the brain that's there already, the prefrontal cortex that's there, and continue to do that throughout their entire lifespan. As parents, when we do that, we're helping them to internalize the process rather than lecturing, cajoling, bribing, pushing, berating, and all those other things that always end up us drained, they're mad, we're mad, we're frustrated. We don't get anywhere with it.
They don't learn when they're feeling stressed. And when anybody feels stressed, they don't learn. And you, Pete, you said that, you know, the parenting process isn't perfect, and make no mistake. The entire time this time is going on, I'm doing my own regulation process of,
sure,
Kristen, you know what you're learning.
You're almost 12 years old. Don't blow up. Don't blow up.
Of course. He can't. He doesn't want to do this. And you have to have empathy for that. And, you know, this home-based learning thing is really hard. And he's kind of, you know, a little bit of a late bloomer anyway. And you just teach him how to regulate himself because he doesn't know. Don't yell. Don't yell.
Oh, I think too, like, being their prefrontal cortex, like Pete was saying, you have an opportunity for them to understand quicker, mm-hmm, that they have more control over the outcomes of their life. Mm-hmm. And right, the earlier and earlier you can help them understand and internalize that, mm-hmm, the easier it will be for them to step into the role of the adult that you're trying to treat them like.
Yeah, because, mm-hmm, you're empowering them.
Right. And by modeling that self-regulation that you are doing, you're showing them. Because as the saying goes, they will learn more from what we model than from what we tell them. You know, the parent that's sitting there going, you know, it's a really bad thing for you to smoke. It's really, you know, the kid's going to go, well, yeah, but you're doing it. So, yeah, again, we're not perfect human beings, and we all have our idiosyncrasies, flaws, and whatever. But the more that we can model what we want our children to become, the more that they're actually going to become that.
It's so hard, Pete.
It is.
It's so hard. You know, when I do, I don't lose it the way I used to, but when I do, like, get impatient, I just the other day, I was like, I've been saying a lot, like, I don't have time to do this, or I don't have time to do that, and just kind of, like, talking out loud to myself, sort of, and then Aiden picked up on it, and he said, I know you don't have time, you know, for this and that, and I sat down, and I hugged him, and I was like, look, man, I am super stressed out. You know, it's really hard, this pandemic time. You know, life has changed so much, and I'm just, you know, not my full self, and this is not you. It is not you at all. There are so many kids struggling just like you are, and so many parents feeling just like I am, and we're just going to do our best and just take it one thing at a time, and if we don't get it all done, then we just don't. It's fine. Yeah. So that I'm sort of, you know, parenting isn't perfect, and that is okay, but it's important when you can to sort of backtrack and explain that imperfection to the kids, because that keeps them from internalizing, like, I'm an inconvenience, mom doesn't have time, or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, because we're all human too. And it promotes and models good communication in relationships. Marriages aren't perfect. There's plenty of times I've said things that have hurt my husband's feelings, and I have to be like, so that thing that I said, I didn't mean it. I'm really sorry, and I actually mean this other thing.
Yeah. So. Well, I think that, like, for me, there's one last thing that I think that, if parents are going to wrap their head around, now would be the time. So this happens all the time with parents talk to me, and be like, they don't really have a plan for the future, especially as they're getting close to, like, the end of high school. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't really have a plan for the future. They don't really know what life's going to be like. And I have to be like, of course they don't. They've never done this before. Right? They've never done this before. In fact, their whole life, other people have been telling them what to do. School has been telling them what to do. You've been telling them what to do. And then all of a sudden, like, they're supposed to magically know what they're going to do with the rest of their life. like, of course they don't know. And so a lot of opportunity right now is normalizing with your kid that it's okay for them not to know what to do.
Yeah.
And even like if that happened for you, I didn't know what I was going to do whenever I was that age. Like, it's okay to throw that out there, right? Understand that they not only cognitively do they not have the capability of being able to project that far out accurately. It's no different for them than it is for you right now, right? We cannot project out that far with any type of accuracy. And this is such a huge, phenomenal decision in our society about what you're going to do for the rest of your life, what you're going to do for your career. I mean, people label themselves based on their occupation in our society. So it's a tremendous amount of pressure.
Yeah.
And do not be upset that your kid does not know what they want to do. You know, the neighbor kid, maybe they do know what they're going to do. Great for them, right? They are the vast minority. They are the minority.
Yeah.
Gosh, I can only say that even in my short career as a counselor, I'm probably about like 8 years in, thousands of kids, only about 5% knew what they wanted to do and actually pursued that in any type of capacity.
Yeah.
Right? It is the vast minority. And I think that's just so important for us to wrap our minds around, is that kids this day and age, they have so many options. They have access to so many resources. There are so many people that are asking them what they're going to do with their life, and they don't know. Not only do they not have the mental capability of knowing, but it is such a big decision that we just need to give them space. Like, understand, they don't know.
Foster their strengths and interests and applaud them for that. And when they change, applaud them for those too. And that's the best that you can do, is just support them with what they're wanting to do right now.
Yeah. The other thing you said, Craig, that I wanted to touch on was you said they don't have any life experience. And that couldn't be more accurate. They don't. But one of the things that I often found, because I don't work with kids on a regular basis anymore, but spent several years early in my career doing so, and certainly it was the model that I did with my son as well, was what kind of responsibility do they have at home now? And how much am I raising them with a certain level of responsibility? Well, they've got sports and they've got, you know, studying to do. And I'm like, yeah, do they have a job if they're old enough to work? Do they pay for their own cell phone? Do they know how to do a budget? Do they know how to do laundry? Do they know how to cook? If not, by the time they're in high school, if they're not learning those skills, then that's on us as parents to go, we're falling short. Because they need to have those skills before we send them off somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the best place to get it is at home. So they need to learn that chores, at least this is my belief, chores is not something you get allowance for, you earn money for. It's something you do because it's a responsibility of how we take care of each other and how we support each other in a family unit. And when we live together with other people, we pitch in as a part of our social responsibility mm-hmm. to each other.
Do it for the wives of the future.
For those of you with boys, right?
Yeah.
Or those of you who may have people who end up with the same gender. But yeah, but teach them, sit them down when you're doing the budget and let them see how much time it takes and how much it actually costs.
Oh yeah. To
pay the cable bill, the electric bill, gas, the mortgage. I mean, by the time taxes and all that stuff is gone, oh my gosh, you make so much money. Well, here's what's left, you know, that we have to use for anything. And we put some in savings and we put some in retirement if we're able to, if we're in that kind of household. But having them understand all of those things when they're adolescents is incredibly important to giving them some perspective of what it is to be an adult and be grown mm-hmm. up, what responsibility really looks like.
It's empowering to them.
It is incredibly empowering to them, and it helps them form those decisions of what it really takes. The other thing that I often used to do with a lot of my adolescents was say, if you're interested in whatever field it is, let's look up people who do those kinds of jobs. Let's send them an email. Let's reach out to them via social media and see if they'll spend some time talking with us via video chat, phone call, whatever, and talk to them, interview them for 20 or 30 minutes and ask them what a day in the life of their job is like. And they may find, oh my God, I could never do that. Or they may find, God, I would love to do that.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how many adolescents I've worked with where we'll be talking about careers. And I'll be like, well, what do your mom and dad do? And I'll be like, oh, they do this and that. But I go, oh, have you ever talked to them about their career? I'm like, no.
No.
I'm like, well, you should probably talk to your parents about it. Like, you know, maybe they do something that you would really like doing, right? Yeah. That'd be a great source of information, right? But what that tells me is their parents also did not come and talk to them about, right, about their career or about anything like that.
I drag my kids everywhere I go.
Do what?
Professionally. I take the boys nearly everywhere I go professionally, wherever I can. Obviously, they can't be in session with me, but I take them as many places as I can go, and I teach them about shaking hands and making eye contact. And the last thing that we had that we went to, they were like out in the hallway running around like lunatics, but they did come in and shake hands and make eye contact, and then they did that. So, but they had that exposure to what professional life is like and, you know, some etiquette, and they still are kids, and it was fine.
Some people have therapy dogs. You're training therapy kids, right?
Yeah, I have a therapy dog and therapy kids.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as parents, a lot of times we try to keep things in different baskets, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be. And this is actually a good opportunity where, while so many of us are at home or with our kids, to have some of these conversations. And since there is so much time, like maybe you can have more of the conversations more frequently, or, and if you feel more comfortable with someone, like maybe feels more comfortable just kind of talking a little bit about you know, whatever it is, like interest or emotions, or maybe it feels a little more comfortable talking about drugs, and then going off to things that may be a little more difficult for you, you know, whether or not that's like talking a little more about sex, or talking a little more about like how like hard it is for you to manage anger, and, you know, different mistakes you've made, or, you know, being able to have these conversations doesn't mean that you have to just jump in the deep end right away. You're more than welcome to. Yeah, you're more than welcome to if you want, but you don't have to do that. You know, build up a little bit of fortitude to be able to do that and have those kind of conversations, and your kids will appreciate it. I know that I never grew up in a family where it was okay to talk about any of that stuff. Like, we didn't talk about sex. We did talk about budgets and stuff like that a lot. And because of that, I'm a big budget guy.
My stepmom taught me how to balance a checkbook in high school, and I really appreciated that. She also taught me how to iron, color coordinate my closet, and put a bra on. All very important lessons.
Yeah. And like, there's so much. I think that parents, a lot of times, they wait for their kids to come and ask them. Mm-hmm. Like, that ain't gonna happen. Your kid doesn't know what they don't know. They don't know that they should be coming in and ask this stuff. Mm-hmm. And don't wait until your kid goes off to college or whatever, and then they're calling you up, be like, how do I do the laundry? That is not the time to have those kind of lessons. They should have already been there. Right?
And problems that occur because they haven't learned, or just, you know, get ahead of the game. Yeah.
Well, I know we're winding down here, but I did want to throw in one last real quick thing to say. Yeah, all of these conversations are important and good to have. And the other thing I would say, if you're spending that much time with your kids, have fun, play, set all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And really, really engage them in a playful, kind of not so serious way also. Be willing to be a kid with them at whatever age they're in, and be with them with whatever it is that they enjoy. And let them teach you about what they love, and have fun and play with them as if you were that age. Really capitalize on that, because when you can laughter is one of the shortest ways to build rapport and relationship with them. And if you can laugh and be silly and stupid with them and laugh at yourself, that trust to have those more difficult conversations really expands a great deal.
Yeah, this is why I like you, Pete. You're so great. Wait, you know, speaking of which, I just bought a tub of Cool Whip the other day so that we can put it on the table and play with it as like a sensory type thing, which is great for littler kids. Mm-hmm. But I wanted something on purpose. I wanted something a little more, you know, kid-like for the boys to do.
Wanted to do this. She's saying that she wanted her kids to. So you could say it's all right. You can be honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I wanted to taste the whipped cream. It's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a fun, easy little thing to do.
Whipped cream castle on the table.
Yeah. It is fun. And be willing to be a make a fool of yourself in front of your kids, because it shows them vulnerability and the fact that you are perfect. You can make mistakes. You can look dumb, and the world doesn't fall apart.
No, it doesn't. Last time we did it, I put food coloring in the whipped cream and I put it on my face, but then the food coloring stained my face blue. Yeah.
Now is a great time that your kids are going to learn from you what your priorities are, mm-hmm. right? If your priority is spending time with them, being goofy like Pete says, building a relationship with them, then they'll get the message that they're important. Mm-hmm. If your task right now is to go and fix up the house and stay away from them, then the house is important. If your goal is to watch the news all day and try to find out what's going on in the world, then they're going to know that that's important. Mm-hmm. Right, whatever impression you want your kids to have about importance, where they fit in their life, in your life, is now, right? They'll be watching, just like they will be their whole life. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Right now, you guys, I mean, it's a tough situation for a lot of us, but it's also a huge blessing for a lot of us that we have an opportunity to have such an impression on our family and kids during this time.
Absolutely.
So, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's been good talking to you, yeah. To you guys.
You too.
Well, especially, this is kind of more of an impromptu thing. This wasn't what I was thinking we were going to talk about today, but I think that the impromptu conversations are always the best. So I want to thank you guys, Pete and Kristen, for joining me here today. And I want to thank all of you guys for listening to us. And we know this is a tough time right now. We hope that you found this helpful. And we wish all of you well. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.